my philosophy has always been, number one, I don't believe having a massive team necessarily equals massive value, massive productivity. It's not linear in terms of increasing capability. In fact, you find that there's a, it actually decreases productivity per person if you have a massive team. So that's part one of my philosophy, is the fact that having a more smaller, nimble team is more effective than having a large team. But in order to have a smaller, more nimble team, you need them to be extremely effective. And to be effective, it's actually not technical skill.
Hello, and welcome to Coffee with Coalesce, a monthly podcast about all things data and the trends and technology transforming our industry. I'm Armand Petrosian, CEO of Coalesce, and here with me is my co-founder and CTO, Satish Jayanthi. Together, we'll be your hosts for the next hour.
And we got a very special guest, Goo. We're going to be talking about democratizing the 10x data engineer or engineer. Welcome, Goo. It's awesome to have you. I think we've been talking about doing this for a little while, but I'll let you introduce yourself and just give your background for the audience here.
Sure thing. Hi, folks. I'm Goo Seah. I lead data engineering here at Groupon 2001. A background of myself, been in the data space for quite a number of years now, been through like seen several couple different hype cycles throughout the ages, but have been involved in from anything from like early stage with BI, enterprise data warehousing, leading data platform teams, to ultimately driving a lot of innovations in this new era where AI is kind of looking into the forefront of carving out that new future.
Love it. I'm pumped to have you on board and part of this discussion. I think it's something that is incredibly relevant to what a lot of companies are talking about. Obviously, we got Satish, my co-founder. My name's Armand, for anybody who's hopping in for the first time. By the way, if you are tuning in, let us know where you're listening in from. Let us know what city or country you're in. Just leave it in the comments so that way we know that this is working properly as we get rolling. Usually there's a little bit of a delay. So anyways, we'll be on the lookout for that. And of course, as we go, feel free to ask any questions for Goo that you're curious about from him. But I've known you, Goo, for a long time. So is Satish. And I've always felt like you've been doing things in a cutting edge way, but also in a very sustainable fashion. So I think some of the concepts that you're blogging about recently and some of the ways that you approach analytics projects in general is top tier. I would say one of the best analytics professionals and leaders that I've ever interacted with. So incredibly excited for this conversation. I think first question, just to kick us off, you were the first person, at least for me, to ever bring up the concept of the 10X data engineer. And it's something that you've been passionate about. You've got a lot of history using all types of different technologies. How did you come across the idea of the 10X data engineer in the first place? Like, give us that story or that narrative of how you landed on this.
Sure thing. Firstly, I appreciate you having me on here. I mean, those many years working together has been always been fun.
Totally.
And just to think about, like, I think the setting of it really that I kind of put it out there of like democratizing the 10X engineer. And it's not just engineer in reality. It's like the 10X data practitioner, whether you're an engineer or an analyst. Mm-hmm. And the reason why I brought it up there was the fact that kind of a background of my, for folks who weren't aware, I mean, I ended up building a lot of like the data analytics platform team within large enterprise organization. And then what I've observed is the fact that all these great tools as part of like the modern data stack, these tools exist because number one, they solve very, very important problems and challenges in the data space. And number two, in the fact that what I've seen is that they solve in a way that was very different from enterprise tooling that I've seen in the past, coming from like an Informatica background.
Right.
One of my initial reasons of building a data analytics platform team and a data platform in general was the fact that it was very, very difficult to scale with legacy technology. And because these legacy technologies were designed around kind of a different era where, I don't know, I've seen where this emphasis of offshoring of work was very, very prevalent. So Informatica is great for that, where we specifically build very highly templated capability, templated components that we had our offshore team scale out to build all the pipelines, because building pipelines was extremely tedious.
Yep.
So with the modern data stack, it was a little different. It was in the fact that as a data practitioner, I don't need to know all the nitty gritty details of how do I ingest data? How do I store data? How do I transform data to the point of knowing the underlying optimization techniques? Now, those optimizations are still incredibly important, but they're not as important to be successful, where you have to tinker all these different things. And because of that, what I've observed is that as a data practitioner, you can actually do almost end-to-end. Like the amount of skill sets needed for requiring to do so is not that much. A little bit of Python, a lot of SQL, and you can build an end-to-end data pipeline hooking, connecting a ton of different sources of application data to ultimately derive and provision your analytics and your insight for your users end-to-end as a single practitioner. And what that means is I'm seeing this finally coming to fruition, where as a data practitioner, I don't need to interact with three or four or five different teams to get stuff done. I could do it myself, doing it end to end. Now, granted, there are ways you could still be more efficient, but the reason why that's even remotely possible is to the point of that 10x engineer. You can be 10 times productive. You can produce 10 times output. In fact, even up to 100 times the output if you do it right. And that's really where kind of the genesis of why I posted about it, of because of modern data.
I love it. I mean, both Satish and I, we've dealt with tons of massive scale implementations historically on-premise, now all in the cloud on Snowflake. But in the earlier days when we were working together, I mean, we would come across teams that had a data modeling team, a data warehouse development team or ETL team, there would be a data quality team or data stewardship team, or, you know, there's all these different profiles of people.
Don't forget the data architect.
Yeah, and the data architect. So there's like, and then you've got the data analyst. So you got like six layers to get through to get to the final stage of actual analysis. And what you're seeing now, largely I would attribute to just the cloud in general, but those roles have all kind of starting to get formed into one. And one person can do pretty much the entire life cycle. Do you attribute that as well to just how learning curves to products have shifted? Is it a focus on automation, ease of use? Is it the cloud? Is it all these things? Like what can you talk about that a little bit, Gu?
It's a combination of everything. It's never just like one single change in general. But what I've always observed is like, I don't know, like folk, as when I was working as leading data platform teams, there's one kind of key metric that I've been like relentlessly focused on is developer productivity. So anyone who's like, especially on the software engineering side, we're always like, if you're on the platform team, you always focus on developer velocity. So if you're the time it takes for a developer or an analyst to start their work and deploy to production, that cycle time is incredibly important. And the reason why you can achieve 10x in terms of developer velocity is, to your point, one of the key things is the simplicity of design of a lot of these modern data stack applications, and the fact that, for example, when you're ingesting data, like rather than spending a lot of time figuring out Salesforce's nuances of APIs, bulk API 1.0, 2.0, right, figuring out the nuances of how do I structure it, ingest it, scale it, and so forth, you can just connect like something like Fivetran. And instead of like figuring out a lot of times of like, how do I model this data? Do I need to pull up my Kimball book to figure out the designs and all that stuff? I can just use like Coalesce with all these templates and with kind of like the way we've approached the standardization to very quickly model and transform data to provision it. And then finally, you could use a tool like Sigma to then just very quickly visualize it without doing all the nitty-gritty components of working around tools like Power BI, for example.
Yep.
And I found that to be like the kind of the key thing in the fact that Informatica, like what I've always found is even if you bring folks on, it takes like a good few weeks to train and onboard them. Yep. But if I were to onboard someone with Coalesce, it'll take me 2 hours and you're good to go. And they can build high quality data models where you just have to do a peer review and then boom, you can deploy to production. That's how quick the iteration cycles are nowadays.
Yeah, it's amazing. I mean, I remember we did a webinar with the co-founder of Fivetran. We were just talking about the core philosophies of their product. And it felt like in the historical ETL days with products like an Informatica, there was just such a burden placed on the complexities and nuance associated with it. Whereas between Snowflake, Fivetran, Coalesce, Sigma, it's all basically around automation, ease of use, still, of course, extensibility, but abstracting away a bunch of the unnecessary complicated pieces that are only supposed to be used 5 to 10% of the time, and really trying to empower as many as people to work as effectively as possible. And so one of the other questions, and you touched on this a little bit, like you're one of the most knowledgeable people, I would say, when it comes to the overall landscape of analytics. Like I feel like I could talk to you about any segment in the analytics workflow, whether it's ingestion, data quality, data observability, data cataloging, data transformations, BI, and you've pretty much spoken to every vendor. So what do you look for when you're evaluating technologies before you make a purchase as a data analytics leader?
So first and foremost, like to your point right there, when it comes to evaluating the kind of the data landscape, I don't know if folks on this call, they're probably familiar. There's like this mad diagram of data science tools, and it's like 3,000 products out there.
Yes.
Like no one in their right mind will be able to make sense out of it. And I think like that's incredible. That's why it's called a mad diagram. It's really, you go mad trying to like figure it out. So rather than trying to figure it out, I like to kind of draw the kind of the boundaries of what they serve as a function. So like in terms of like data storage or data analytics storage layer, you think about draw the box of the function, and there's only a few select players in that, it, like are really kind of core to that, like Snowflake, Databricks, or even like BigQuery and even Postgres, if you really want to go for that, area. Yeah. But you kind of create those capability boundaries, and then within the capability boundaries, this is where it kind of gets, it's an interesting nuance and an art to it. Mm-hmm. So to your point, what you described there, and the fact that you have to think about, okay, for my organization, what capability, what do I need out of this capability? What is kind of like good looks like for me?
Right.
And more importantly, not just for me, but for like the team, the organization, from a reskilling standpoint, training perspective, to kind of understand what do I need out of this? So that way you can shortlist it. And I usually, my technique is I end up shortlisting of kind of the wants and needs down to like optimally two vendors, because right. you're not going to be able to evaluate like the 50 different vendors in that one capability. So then you shortlist it to like two or three, maximum three, don't go above that. And you list out those capabilities, what you're looking to get out of it. And then you reach out to the vendors and kind of talk to them of like, what are you guys building? What problem are you solving? And that's what I love about this kind of era is like, it's the proliferation of different startups and different communities are really super focused on a core problem. Like with Coalesce, you guys are super focused and hyper-focused to the problem statement of transformation, modeling data in a way that other data teams could very, very well benefit from it, to bring modeling capabilities and disseminate it across the entire, you know, the rest of the data practitioners. So that way they don't have to learn all the nitty-gritty details. But that's your problem statement, right? And me as someone evaluating, I need to understand your problem statement, understand what is kind of your mission vision, what are your capabilities on that front, how do they map to my organization? And then I do an evaluation to really understand what it takes. And what I, and my trick with my evaluation, I don't evaluate all the capabilities at once, because there's that probably like six or seven of them that you really need. Right. So what I do one capability at a time and then evaluate the vendor set doing that thing. And how I do it is I use a use case. So the point where we started was my use case was we're in the midst of like rethinking our, when I like first joined Group 1001, maybe 2 years ago, the, one of the key challenges is that we had a pretty bad data architecture design at the initial start, where we're using Postgres, things were breaking, the cycles were very long, 8 hours long. It was not designed in a way that was designed to scale and maintain. So we decided to let's start from the drawing board. And one of the key things was that our Postgres environment was not managed well, did not have proper environments and separation. There were a lot of workloads where it couldn't scale from an analytical query standpoint. So that's where we started that use case of let's find something to replace Postgres. And here's a reason why. And then that's where we ended up a selection of like BigQuery versus Snowflake, and end up choosing Snowflake as kind of our primary data platform. And when you do undergo that selection and you finally, you know, decide I'm going with Snowflake or Databricks, whatever, you need to write out an ADR, which is known as an architectural decision record. I choose this vendor for these reasons. Why? Because of these two capabilities side by side. But I also understand there's a consequence to my decision. I know that by choosing Snowflake, I am giving up these XYZ features from BigQuery. And I'm okay with that. Because 2 years from now, like right now, I completely forgot why I did it. So writing that down so people can know is super important, because everyone will ask you, why did you choose Coalesce over DBT? Well, I have it right now. So those are things that people have to know. And you have to share those thoughts, because the conditions, the environment you're in, and why your organization needs that particular vendor, those are always ultimately going to be challenges by the organization at large. And you have to have the right use case, the right reasoning, and the logic to be able to leverage it.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah. I think you follow a strong process there and have made some awesome selections too. You know, obviously outside of Coalesce, but like when I think about the other vendors that you work with, it's always been a revealing aspect of like who we should work with at Coalesce and who we partner with. So
yeah. And the key thing I would kind of point out, like, it also thinking about like their vision and mission, I can't emphasize this enough. Like every startup out there is going to be, they have a very key mission that they're trying to achieve. So understand that and making sure that that's what you want, because whatever vendor you select today, their capabilities today is the worst capabilities you'll ever have right now. Yeah. Because 4 years from now, it's going to be drastically different. And it should be going in a direction that makes sense for you and your organization.
Yeah, that makes sense. I love the concept of digging into that versus functionality. I can't stand when I'm talking to the sales org and there's companies that are just looking at products based on a checklist of features. That's like the absolute worst way, in my opinion, to evaluate it without thinking about the overall value proposition and the direction of the company and what the mission is that they're actually trying to solve. Like, that's why you should select a vendor. Like, it should be a multi-year long journey where you're aligned on the mission that they're going after and solving for the customer.
It also helps you to kind of, you know, in the hiring, you know, the team members that you're going to be, you know, assigned to this particular methodology or particular tool. I think it just helps you grow as a company and as a team by, you know, kind of understanding that underlying, you know, mission of a tool. Yeah,
exactly. And like I said, documenting that as a part of the ADR, I can't emphasize enough. I love that, because it's a lot of times we kind of like as a data leader joining other organizations, joining in and saying and seeing kind of the stack and how they designed it, all that information gets lost. So I've always been focused of like sharing that information and knowledge. So anyone that joins, they'll have a whole set of pages to read to really understand why did we choose this, because then they'll understand the context of why. And providing context of the why to an engineer and analyst is the most powerful force multiplier out there, because if you don't understand why, then you don't understand what you're trying to solve. I can't emphasize that enough. Like, as a data team, that's super important.
Yeah. I mean, before doing anything, it makes so much more sense to figure out why you're doing it in the first place. And sadly, that's not always the case in use cases and customer stories. So I'm curious as well, when you think about how you design your team, like the actual personnel front, like what do you think of when you go about building out an analytics team, a top-notch analytics team? And how did you approach that in Group 1001 and in the past? And some of it, assuming you inherit a team, right? Like you go to join a company, you've got people there that are already there. So you're not hiring everybody new, but was there any thoughts there on how you build out your dream team?
Yeah. So I would say I like to talk about philosophy. I don't know, weird, but I like to think about like the philosophy for hiring is a little different, or at least I think it's different. You could tell me, but my philosophy has always been, number one, I don't believe having a massive team necessarily equals massive value, massive productivity. It's not linear in terms of increasing capability. In fact, you find that there's it actually decreases productivity per person if you have a massive team. So that's part one of my philosophy, is the fact that having a more smaller, nimble team is more effective than having a large team. But in order to have a smaller, more nimble team, you need them to be extremely effective. And to be effective, it's actually not technical skills. It's actually, for me, I don't really necessarily focus too much on technical skills. If they can solve super challenging technical problems, like there's baseline technical skills that you have to evaluate, like Python, SQL knowledge and skill set, but it's actually what's here. And what I mean what's here, it's the mindset of the individual that really will unlock the potential and the value and the capabilities of that data team itself. And what I mean by mindset is, like, do they have the capacity to learn? Yep. Can they learn very quickly? Do they have high mental acumen to be able to acquire knowledge, apply it very quickly? Are they someone that is willing to go work above and beyond? And when I say above and beyond, I don't mean like you'll go crank out like 60-hour weeks. What I'm saying is that doing more upfront work of doing the research, doing the due diligence, doing the kind of the grind to be able to improve themselves. And then last but not least, like when it comes to capacity to learn, extending on that is having the right growth mindset. Because when you come onto a job, like people always like look to hire someone that fits exactly this use case we're hiring. No, that's not how you hire people. What you have to hire people is understanding they come and bring their set of skill set and their mindset and experience, and you bring them to the team and bring them to the fold, and they can now learn your stack, learn your tools, learn your environment, learn your business, and then take it from there. Like that's how I always like aim to hire. It's like, it's more so the mindset. And the one thing that I will say from a mindset perspective, like the philosophy of how I evaluate them, is I like to think about, are they solution builders? Are they thinking about the solution than just focusing on this little piece?
I would say that's been one of the best aspects of starting this company at Coalesce, like seeing some of our customers who have never built a data project before go in and effectively execute on building out their data warehouse or their data engineering use case. And so we've had, you know, certain people in roles that you would never imagine would be data practitioners. So like, you know, from a CFO all the way down to like a complete business analyst who's just gotten closer to being able to build out the data engineering use cases that historically would have been impossible. I mean, talk about Informatica, like no chance they would have been able to pull this off. But now, given the technology landscape's evolved and it's modernized, it is completely doable. And as long as the person is willing to learn and they understand the data and what they're looking for well enough, the opportunity is limitless. And so when I think about how you approach hiring and the 10X data practitioner in general, like that reality has really come to life. And so you don't need somebody who's spent a decade doing these types of projects anymore. You just need somebody who's got a high ceiling, somebody who's hungry, who is willing to learn, and then has a passion for data. And I've seen that firsthand. It's been like some of our best customer stories of really getting people to production that historically wouldn't have been able to do that. So
absolutely. And maybe it's because I'm biased, because I am not the most technical data person out there. I'm not an engineer by trade. I have just been relentlessly passionate about data. Yeah. And I'll what I always do is I identify, what do I not know? What am I missing? Mm-hmm. How do I learn it? And then just go figure it out. Like, so I always tell people, like, I'm leading these data teams, but I'm like by far the most unqualified data leader. However, I promise you, I'll build the right solution. I'll build a solution that scales.
Well, I got a question for you, Gu. So what's a good mix of people in a data team, you think? From technical as well as non-technical aspects.
Good question. So I'll tell you how I approach. So number one, it's different for each organization, because each organization have different nature of data, and the fact that there's nature from like Intel, so like even like the Vs, the volume, velocity, and so forth, and also the complexity of the data in scope. So I'll tell you, within our organization, my emphasis is I tend to have more of a 50-50 mix of data engineers as well as data analysts. But our data engineers and data analysts are different. And I'll say they're different because traditionally, data engineers are relegated to building data pipeline. So they're involved of moving data from point A to point B, or doing the data modeling of creating the dimensions, the facts, and whatnot.
Right.
And a data analyst has always been relegated to embedded with the business, building the BI dashboard.
Based on what the data engineers built, right?
Exactly. But they also have like a tight collaboration in order to deliver the insight, right? Yeah. So in what we did at Group 1001 is different is the fact that my engineers are not necessarily building data pipelines. My engineers are actually more focused on building the automation. So they're building the integration, the glue of stitching together all the different tools that we have to automate and integrate it. So that way we have a holistic control plane, observability plane of what's happening, what's loading, what's processing, how do we observe it? How do we do quality checks against it? And then my analysts will actually focus not just embedding with the business, but also be thinking about and understanding, number one, their business problem. Number two, the data sets required from the upstream sources. Number three is also modeling it and the fact that they're actually creating the data models using Coalesce. And the reason why this works is because of that the tool stack that we chose. Right. And the fact that as a data engineer, a lot of the data ingestion, the acquisition piece of landing data to our Snowflake environment is already covered by FiveTran. Yep. So what they actually have to build are the things that are not covered. So anything that's not related that are kind of this obscure data source, they'll ingest those in. But that's like 10% of their time in terms of like the workload to enable. They're more focused on just integrating and creating this orchestration solution. And then as a data analyst, using Coalesce with the templates and so forth, they can very easily create the data models. And we go through like periodic code reviews, model reviews, pipeline reviews to ensure that this makes sense. Because the hardest thing in computer science was a Phil Carlton, was in the fact that in computer science, there's two hard things, cache invalidation and naming things. So making sure that we have right naming, naming and stuff. And
yeah,
exactly.
That's so true. Yeah. People used to spend months in a room just to figure out what the column names and the table names should be.
Or those are very difficult. Yeah. Those are very difficult. I've actually given up and just like let ChatGPT name stuff for me because I think they actually do a better job and they're consistent.
That's awesome. Would you say when you think about this overall approach, I mean, it sounds very much like what people mean when they say data mesh, like being able to actually democratize analytics throughout the organization and have lines of business or citizen data engineers interact with the data in a way that historically would have been a fractured approach. Is that aligned with your thinking, or is this just kind of instinctually how you got there? It wasn't around trying to mimic a data mesh methodology.
It's instinctual. Yeah. So I think it just has obvious,
basically.
Yeah, I don't think it's obvious. I think it depends on the maturity of the organization and what type of organization. Yeah. If you're a startup, there's no point of doing a data mesh, like zero.
It's zero too small.
Don't do it, right?
It's not needed. It's small.
You don't have enough organizational boundaries that you have to consider in a small organization. Right. But when you're a larger enterprise, you know, national enterprise, where you have multiple lines of business, multiple different teams and departments with different scopes of data sets that you have to deal with, data mesh actually works well.
Yeah.
But I'll tell you what doesn't work well in a data mesh is when you have each individual department having their own set of data teams without any sort of unification, any sort of governance, any sort of standardization.
Yep.
So I like to think of it as kind of like what we did instinctually is that we're doing more of a hub and spoke model wherein the kind of the hub, the center of it is this platform that we agreed upon that we're going to use. And then from a spoke are going to be like these data analysts and sometimes data engineers are going to be involved with the different departments and the different parts of the group organization that are going to be embedded to the use case. Because embedding to the organization, to the department will allow you to have better context, which allows you can solve more problems and create better solutions for the different departments.
Yep. Yeah, that makes perfect sense. So you touched on this a little bit too. You brought up ChatGPT. This wouldn't be a live stream, a Coalesce live stream or a Coffee with Coalesce if we didn't talk about this. And it's really just around what your thoughts are in general on AI as far as analytics is concerned. Like you mentioned behind the scenes earlier before we hopped on this live stream that you're talking to all these executives at an event recently and everybody's talking about AI, but there's very little substance to what they're saying. And so what's your thoughts? Like, Like, what's your thoughts on how you're approaching AI right now? Because I feel like it's probably a lot further along than most companies out there.
Yeah. So I think number one, it's not that they don't have substance. So kind of like for background for most folks. So I've attended like some of these like executive conferences are talking about AI and capabilities and met with other like CDOs, CTOs, CIOs. And what's interesting in the fact is like observe like a lot of, I mean, pretty much every organization out there is actually looking and experimenting with AI, in particular, generative AI. Mm-hmm. And why is that? I think it's a combination of the fact that generative AI for the first time ever actually brought AI to the forefront where it's no longer this very highly technical experimentation. It's something that it could be feasibly applied as a kind of a force driver, a force multiplier for an organization.
Right.
So that's what I've seen. And based on my own research, I saw like 77% of enterprises out there either using AI or exploring the use of AI. Mm-hmm. But the key thing that I've kind of observed after discussing was that everyone is actually in the experimentation phase. And that kind of makes sense as the fact that ChatGPT didn't really exist until, was it November 2022? So it's still very nascent. And as an enterprise, there's a reluctance to be able to get there. But I take a lot of the experiences of what I've seen of like AI and data science teams in the past, a lot of AI data science teams have always been focused on experimentation. And when I say focus on experimentation, I mean that the common notion was that you would do like 100 experiments.
Right.
And one of those experiments will provide some kind of a value, some kind of capability, some kind of insight that makes sense for the organization to deploy and roll out to production. And then you have to do the second piece of it, which is actually to take this model and then deploy it to production and do all the heavy lifting afterwards. That's like a 1% deployment rate.
Right.
My challenge and my thought process around AI is, what if we do 80% deployment rate? What does it mean? What would it take to do that? To do an 80% deployment rate for machine learning, for AI models? How do you do that? How do you achieve that? Number one, don't experiment 100 times. Mm-hmm. Reduce that down. Reduce that vector down to like maybe 5 experiment. What are the 5 highest value use cases? And this is not an exploration of like experimentation to find a hypothesis that works. It's like thinking about your existing business. Mm-hmm. What challenges are there? What outcomes can you use using AI or ML to be able to actually drive to that? And I think that the term for that is actually an outcome-driven design. So you use an outcome, a business outcome that has tangible value there, select those, then figure out where does AI fit to be able to enable that, AI does enable that, then do those 5 experiments, and then focus on how do we deploy these into production in a way. What I like to do is I like to deploy these in a way that is not, I would say it's kind of on the background where it's not directly influencing decisions, but we're observing and seeing the response and the automation, the capabilities. And then once you have all the monitoring, observability, auditability aspects of this in place to scale, then you enable into production. And then you also use all of the stack in place. So number one, reducing the selection criteria of the experiments. Number two is focusing on not just experimenting, deploying, running it in parallel, mm-hmm. getting it out there. Because the thing with data that's very, very different from application design is data is stateful. The data mm-hmm. you have today is not the same data you're going to have tomorrow. In fact, that's what the challenge with most data teams is that you develop and deploy a data pipeline. A few months from now, it breaks because the state of the data has changed. The state of the world has changed. The expectations of the data has changed.
It's a lot more thoughtful of approach, similar to like a less is more, but higher quality focused decision-making on which models you're trying to build, what your use case is. Do you think that companies struggle with that because they don't have their analytics foundation built properly in the first place? So it's a bit of a trial and error and it's just so vague. Or why do companies get there in the first place? Like why would we take an approach?
Also, just to follow up to that also, do you think it's going to get better as people understand what AI can and cannot do? Because in the past, I mean, even now, people doesn't have a lot of clarity. But ChatGPT came out, they all thought like everything is going to be magic and, you know, it's going to solve all the problems, you know, all BI is out and it can answer every question. But as you understand more and more what the actual limitations are and how this is to be done, then you're going to don't have to do 100 experiments because now you can kind of focus on the right use cases. So it becomes more possible. Do you think that's going to happen as well? You know,
exactly. Well, that's why I'm kind of talking about it out here, because I think more organizations need to really kind of hone in on like what's the outcome you need to drive with this.
Right.
Using those outcomes, then mobilize teams, the organization to enable those outcomes. And I'm not saying don't experiment. Definitely experiment. You have to experiment. But what I'm saying is that don't overemphasize experiment, meaning that you don't do the 99% of experiment and then only one of them goes to production. Right. Focus on getting more tangible values, going back to what I talked about earlier with the developer velocity, the cycle time of starting on a work and getting something out there, like reducing that cycle time, which means you can now do more iterations of it. Because until you get it out there, you really don't know. And I think like that's the thing that to your point of like, can organizations leverage AI more? I think there's a lot of capabilities organizations can use AI for where you don't need a lot of data. But there's a ceiling. There will always be a ceiling if you don't actually tap into the real potential of the data in your organization. So there's like this data analytics maturity curve, I think, like that has been out there that I kind of blogged about, and the fact that there's different levels of analytics. Mm-hmm. And the way I look at it is always like, I talk about it as a comparison of like Mount Everest. AI is at the very top, the summit of it.
Yeah.
Like, for those of you who aren't familiar, you can't fly to Mount Everest. The air is too thin. Mm-hmm. It's extremely dangerous to get there. And the only way is that you have to summit it. But you have to start at the very bottom in base camp. You have to acclimate, and then you have to prep up to different levels before you can get to that summit. And only when the conditions, the weather, everything is just right, do you summit it? Yeah. And what I'm saying is, for a lot of organization, is like you need to think about like improving the maturity curve of your organization for data analytics. Start with the basics. Start with figuring out how long it takes for you to get an idea out there to production. And the idea doesn't the idea may not necessarily require AI. And to be frank, AI solutions are for the more minuscule, for like a smaller portion of it. A lot of like organizational challenges is understanding what's happening. Why is this happening? How can I predict ultimately, like, to be able to figure out how I can leverage what will likely to happen, and then figure out, okay, what should I do when it will happen there? And then finally create like an AI system that will be able to say like, let me help you with that. Right.
Yeah.
So organizations need to climb that summit. And the key thing is reduce the cycle time, reduce the amount of time it takes to achieve each level so that we can go there faster. So it's not like a multi-year transformation, or more like a decade-long dev transformation. It's like, how do you kind of shrink that down so you can achieve that summit faster?
Yeah, that you bring up something that we've seen as a unifying theme across our customer base too, which is all around. Sometimes it's not as conscious. Well, most of the time, it's not as conscious and articulate as the way you're describing it. But there's this unifying theme around, how do we improve development cycle times? Like, how do we just do things at a faster, higher velocity than we do historically? And I think that's an underlying principle that you've approached the selection of all the technologies that you go with, Coalesce just being one of them. And so by doing that, you allow yourself to get things into production faster, more efficiently, which allows you then to open up opportunities in certain use cases, like you're talking about getting to that peak of the summit with AI use cases. But only are you able to do that once you've got that foundation built and you're able to develop and build things and get things in production rapidly and quickly. And so that to me seems like the biggest thing holding companies back right now from being able to unlock any AI use case. It's actually having the right infrastructure in place and having the right mentality and philosophy in place where you're able to do these things so quickly. So we've got time for one last question. I'm curious to hear, as like, when you think about what you're most excited for in the near future, as far as the analytics industry goes or AI goes, what comes to mind for you?
I'm okay. I'm excited for what will be the snowflake of AI. Mm. And I say this because for a lot of folks in here, like Snowflake came about when like big data was a thing, right? Hadoop was all the rage back in 2013, 2012.
Yep.
It was incredibly complex, has incredible scale, works on internet scale companies, petabytes, God knows how much data you can process with it.
So hard to use. It's just insanely difficult to use, right?
Insanely difficult to use. Lots of teams, lots of different folks, a lot of open source tools that people have to stitch together to make stuff work, right?
Right, right.
And then, like, you know, you have to worry about MapReduce, and eventually Spark came about, and you could do Spark jobs. And then eventually it all changed, right? Then you had Redshift that made it a lot easier, and then Snowflake came that just kind of fundamentally made a significantly better user experience, a developer experience, where you don't have to think about all these different complexities, where you don't have to build Spark jobs.
Right.
Like, what is that snowflake of AI?
Yeah, interesting.
Because I see AI is happening same like back in 2012. Like, there's so much open source tools and stuff to learn and frameworks to use. What is the snowflake version of that? That's what I'm most excited for. That's what I'm waiting for. That's what I'm going to be looking for.
That is exciting. It's like, what's the proprietary technology that's going to come out that just takes all the concepts and the potential, but bridges it together into something that's incredibly easy to use without sacrificing any of the extensibility aspects or the potential functionality. So that's awesome. You're getting me excited. I certainly appreciate you hopping on, Gu. I know that you will be at Snowflake Summit in a couple weeks. So will Satish and I. If anybody wants to find us, hit us up on LinkedIn, connect with Gu. He writes incredible content that he's pumping out a lot of lately. So I am very appreciative, man. Thanks for hopping on with us. And I'm looking forward to seeing you in person here in a couple weeks.
Likewise.
Awesome. Right.
Thanks, Gu.
Thanks, folks. Have a good one.